everybody was interested in community until, you know, at the beginning of COVID, and then that kind of waned. So it's encouraging to see people starting to get encouraged about that again.
Yeah. And like, you can do it either way, right? Like, it's to each his own and what they're comfortable with and whatnot. But I think ultimately, you know, if you're, you know, it's one thing if you're on your own and you're a trapper in the woods. Mm-hmm. It's another thing if you have a family, right? And something happens to mom or dad or whatnot. So sure. Having other people just in terms of, you know, being able to support each other and support each other's families, and not even an emergency situation, but, you know, say you want to go on vacation or whatnot, and then you can have, you know, one of those families maybe take care of your chickens or something like that. And
oh, yeah.
And then trading, right? So you can really cut down on your costs by creating your own bartering systems and whatnot within your community. So if you have all these other people that are involved, you're going to have access to a lot more equipment, a lot more resources, and all that sort of thing. It's to each their own, no judgment there. It's just like, what are you after? And what are you trying to achieve? And what are you starting with?
With tough times, we're starting to see a lot of folks that are interested in homesteading land and gardens, or adding gardens and fruit trees, nut trees to their own land. And this week, I talk with Carrie Brown from Strong Roots Resources, and we talk about tips for how to find your homestead property. Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. Do you plant trees in the fall? People don't realize that when you plant trees in the fall, you give a little bit extra time for the little root nodules to grow, and it can also reduce some of the transplant shock as opposed to spring. For example, in the spring, it's going to get hot in Kansas really fast. So at Grow Nut Trees right now, taking orders for shipping for trees in September and October. I've got chestnuts, hazelnuts, some pecans, and elderberry. They're all adapted to the Midwest, so you know that they will fit in your climate. Check it out, grownuttrees.com.
Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, I have Lindsay Brandon from Permaculture Canada. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you very much for having us here. Me sure. And Arma Garden, there's two of us.
Oh, great. So give a little bit of background about yourself and also Permaculture Canada.
Yeah, you bet. So my name is Lindsay Brandon. I'm from Calgary, Alberta, and that's where I'm based out of. I'm currently running two companies from here, one of them being Permaculture Canada, and it is an outward moving company, we'll say. I'm going to give you a little bit of the story behind the background of what these companies mean so that, yeah, you can kind of understand the context. So Permaculture Canada is this one here. It's excellent. A feminine-based energy. I would consider it an outward-moving energy. So the focus of Permaculture Canada is more the ecosystem restoration, working with watersheds, working with organizations, outward-moving sort of energy. So it's more like a collective ideology that we're working with there. The second company is Arma Garden, and it is inward moving energy, more masculine. So it's more about people that want to really focus on their homestead. So it's more about, you know, my home, my community, my family, and taking care of my land. So they are polar opposites. And I wanted to kind of cover all those bases with the permaculture solutions that we have based on what sort of energy field that they fit into. So both of the companies are intertwined. We have 9 designers on the team, and we're based all the way from Nicaragua up to Canada. And yeah, we do online design as well as, you know, site visits and consulting as well, dependent on the geographic areas of the designers themselves. And yeah, we're doing education and opening up the doors on how we can offer permaculture solutions based on what's being asked out there in the world.
Great. Yeah, so I like your site, permaculturecanada.world. I like your projects that you have on there. Those are really neat. I especially like the farmhouse. And give a little background about some of the projects you have on there.
Yeah, so the farmhouse is in the Gatineau area, and it's more about education and a schoolhouse. So I actually was involved in doing about 15 permaculture demonstration sites over the past couple of years, all with their, you know, unique focus, because everybody has a different reason for doing this sort of thing. So that farmhouse one, you know, was more about children and about education and weaving in the young to the old and bringing back, you know, elders into that education sphere with things like storytelling and whatnot to share with the children. But bridging that gap between the children and the elders is such an important piece of, you know, healing the world out there and providing opportunity for both children to connect with their elders, but also elders not to be so isolated. So that's a really beautiful aspect of that project. Other ones that are on there is the garden compound in Santa Fe in the old town, which was amazing, you know, working with real veterans in the permaculture industry. They've already had this permaculture oasis for many years. So it was really just going in there and seeing, you know, how can we even jack this up even more, which was, you know, a phenomenal challenge and a really exciting thing to do. And I find like each project that I do definitely opens me up into different ways of presenting this type of work. People are coming at it from different parts in the game, right? So sometimes there's a whole orchard on the site that needs to be mapped in order for us to figure out how to fill in the gaps. So that was kind of a scenario with that garden compound project where it was like, you know, you can see a video map on there where I've got time code because I'm working with other collaborative designers while I do this, right? I'll create the concept and I'll create the framework and then collaborate with other designers to really detail in the pieces. So if I'm the one that's doing the site visit, you know, I'm taking a lot of video footage, drone photography, LiDAR images and things like that to give them a sense of what it's like on the ground so that we can collaborate in a way that makes sense three-dimensionally and two-dimensionally as well. Mm-hmm. Other ones that are on there, I got the Modern Homestead on there. That was a TV show that I did last year in June. Had a whole bunch of Texas projects last year in June as well. You know, got to go out to Corpus Christi and over to San Antonio, and, you know, we were doing food bank projects and we were doing restoration projects on places that were compacted by, you know, previous racetrack kind of thing, a horse racetrack where we have to do a lot of remediation, you know, because they've got this spiny plants trying to keep people off the land to restore itself. And yeah, so there's been a ton of projects, you know, I've done over 35 different projects on a smaller scale as well, over 200 acres of design in total, and just keeps going. I was just last week on a site visit close to where I am by Edmonton for a community project, which is really exciting. With Permaculture Canada, I'm really focusing more on creating bioregional relationships because previously I was working, I was running a design team based out of Florida. And there was 40 designers on the team there. They were all over the world. And so were the projects, right? Which was phenomenal. I got to learn so much about plant hardiness zones and working in different, you know, with demographics of people and just different climates, you know, that I hadn't designed in before. So it was excellent in that regard. But there was a deep longing in me to say, you know, if I'm showing up with permaculture in the world, I need some more bioregional relationships. You know, I need to know who's close to me. And then when I started doing that digging work of, you know, who's out there in Western Canada, I started to notice how fragmented it seemed. It's like, well, all these people, I like, you know, want to weave a web between everybody so that we know of each other's presence and, you know, can cross-reference each other, because permaculture is a very broad subject, right? Sure. And for you to go at it alone, sure, you can, you know, but I feel like it's something that's much better with community and, you know, with that collaboration over competition mindset, so that you're really, you know, you're finding experts in the field for very specific elements of your design and whatnot.
Right. So along those same lines, how do you go from Canada to Texas and then incorporate that? It's a different biome. It's a different, whole different climate and everything else. How do you engage the local folks to help you on your design and everything else?
Yeah, really, that actually falls more into the design team and, you know, their location and their specificity, right? With what plants that they're comfortable with and, you know, aware of and they know about. I'm able to put myself in any landscape and understand the patterns and the details that are being, you know, dictated by the landscape before me. And, you know, I'm able to notice what are the pioneer species that are going to tell me about the soil content and what's going on there. And I can read the water, I can read the wind, I can, you know, see the different sectors that we need to assess. And essentially, that permaculture perspective, that overview of the relationships, is something that just crosses all borders, right? This is the language of the land. So when it comes to the details about the plant choices and whatnot, I'll go to, you know, somebody who's specifically closer to that area and collaborate with them, right? And not try to be the pro about everything, right? Oh, and yeah. A lot of times I do, I show up on site and people think I know every single plant out there, and it's not the truth. And I love learning. And ever since I was a small child, I wanted to be one of those people that could walk around and be like, that's that plant and you can use it for this and whatnot. And I never did go into horticulture, but, you know, I find that each experience that I have, I'm learning a little bit more, and it's a little bit a smoother, slower integration process.
That's great. So you and I were on Cormac's Vine Permaculture podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I know both Cormac and I'm seeing folks that are getting concerned about the tough times, and they're wanting to have food forest and have more resilience and self-sufficiency. Are you seeing those kind of new contacts and new folks reaching out for those kind of reasons?
I'm seeing a big push towards community aspect projects. So maybe not so much where it's the self-reliant, where it's, you know, just one person, perhaps, you know, considering their needs. I'm seeing where there's a few individuals that want to care for their entire community. So I'm seeing where there's real leaders in their communities, and these people, you know, there's multiple groups of them. It's not just a one scenario situation. One beautiful thing that I find is that they're often a couple, and they're often very deeply in love and have like the best sense of humors. So this is like a congruent pattern that I'm finding in these couples, these like power couples all over the place that are like, you know, we want to do this for our community. We know, you know, that we can, we have the means to do it. We feel like it's our duty to do it. We want to do it for our community. So it's a very selfless act. It's really beautiful to watch. It's a really good thing to see that they understand that the community aspect and having that in place beforehand is almost completely essential to the success of it. Because you can go ahead and create a design and whatnot, but creating the communities is the piece that's going to take much longer, right? Being able to have all those different skill sets, right? And you talk about preparedness in food, but of course we know it goes like way beyond that, right? Like with the water storage and things like that, and, you know, off-grid energy and redundancy and having all those different skill sets is super important. So pooling your resources, you know, resource management, time management, Skillshare, these are all the sorts of things that are really come up through these community projects.
Yeah, that's encouraging, because instead of seeing the, I'm going to withdraw to my bug out property or my, you know, my prepper enclave, then folks are starting now to think more about community, because that was something that everybody was interested in community until, you know, at the beginning of COVID, and then that kind of waned. So it's encouraging to see people starting to get encouraged about that again.
Yeah. And like, you can do it either way, right? Like, it's to each his own and what they're comfortable with and whatnot. But I think ultimately, you know, if you're, you know, it's one thing if you're on your own and you're a trapper in the woods. It's another thing if you have a family, right? And something happens to mom or dad or whatnot. So having other people, just in terms of, you know, being able to support each other and support each other's families, and not even an emergency situation, but, you know, say you want to go on vacation or whatnot, and then you can have, you know, one of those families maybe take care of your chickens or something like that. And and then trading, right? So you can really cut down on your costs by creating your own bartering systems and whatnot within your community. So if you have all these other people that are involved, you're going to have access to a lot more equipment, a lot more resources, and all that sort of thing. So If you're going to do it on your own, you know, you can do it for very little. We've got people up here in Canada living off, you know, $100 a month, living on Crown land. Like, go ahead, fill your boots. It's to each their own, no judgment there. It's just like, what are you after, and what are you trying to achieve, and what are you starting with?
That's great. So how does ArmaGarden fit in there, and how does it differ from Permaculture Canada and some of the other projects you've been working on?
Yeah, ArmaGarden was definitely influenced by a trip that I had to Kansas going down to the Midwest Preparedness Festival. That's really, you know, even the word was born on those festival grounds. So I was there in June this year to do a talk, and, you know, I was really blown away by the responsiveness of the crowd. You know, I'm a performer by nature, and I'm an artist, and, you know, a little bit out there at times. I don't know if you can tell, but anyways, then I got up there and I just started singing a song, right? That's sometimes how I like crack my code in terms of like breaking into being comfortable in a crowd, is just throw something random out there just to get my beans out and then carry on with my talk. And I started bringing in some pretty ethereal, energetic concepts into what I was talking about. I'm quite a spiritual person myself. And, you know, I hesitated a little bit thinking about maybe I shouldn't, you know, go there. But then, of course, I'm just like, no, just be who you are. Just do your thing. Sure. And I did. And it was really well received. You know, I really felt like I had the attention of the audience. I had an hour and a half of people lining up asking questions afterwards. And I was really, really thrilled. I knew I was with an audience who already got the homesteading bit, right? And mm-hmm. already understood that. So there's that certain level of understanding of where I'm at. But then it's like, well, then we bring in the permaculture perspective. And maybe that wasn't necessarily there, that weaving between elements, the stacking functions, that sort of thing. So I found like they're ready for the information completely, you know, understood it, grasped it completely. But I could see lights going on mm-hmm. in the crowd and whatnot. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I was just sitting down then having a conversation with Tag Meyer there and Graham Towerton, who's the COO with Permaculture Canada. And I don't know how the conversation started, but the word just came to my mind. I'm like, that's what it is. You know, this is the model that we're creating for, you know, coming from the preparedness mentality as well, right? So, you know, there's some strategic defense sort of things in there. And then there's, you know, emergency preparedness in terms of medicine and how we plant those gardens, mm-hmm. right? And how we can have a little bit more of a pharmacy growing on our property. And then all those redundancy things that I was talking about too, you know, the water storage is super important. The soil remediation is super important. But I'm creating it more of a model for, you know, somebody's property. Whereas with Permaculture Canada, it's more of like a demonstration site for others to educate outwards, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the difference, where ArmaGarden's going to have all those other things. And I don't want to let you know all my secrets right off the bat. But, you know, there's ways that we can create perimeters on our properties, we'll say. And there's certain ways that we look at the numbers of things and how we quantify things, in terms of coming from a preparedness model instead of, you know, a Permaculture Canada model, where it's like, this is how we can create abundance over here, but it's not as quantified, right? It's not as centered onto a specific person or group or property itself.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. So looking at the site for ArmaGarden, it seems more community focused than the Permaculture Canada model. And it's actually, in your description, it sounds both the sort of the inverse, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I would say I would sway people towards the ArmaGarden model if that's what they're looking for, that mm-hmm. eco community project. It is right. More of that sort of process. The processes are very similar in terms of the types of investigation I would have to do: geological research, site visits, questionnaires, finding the information from the people, you know, what really drives them, what inspires them, what's their why. These are all really important questions. Yeah. And, you know, often when I start working with people, they're just like, like kind of gobsmacked with all the questions. Oh, I haven't considered that, right? And there's a lot to consider, right? So the process, as we go through the process of, you know, first is the site visit guaranteed. You know, I've already talked with the people once before the site visit has happened. Sometimes I've already had an hour consultation and given them the questions ahead of time. But even then, the more we discuss, the more that, you know, as you get to know people, the more information is revealed. And that's really where my gift is kind of identifying through people's messaging what's important to them. And then also being the bridge into what the land is dictating to me and what is it saying, you know, in terms of placement of structures, in terms of availability of water and all of that. So I kind of feel like I'm a little bit of a catalyst of communication between the two.
Sure.
You know, to speak from what I'm seeing on the land and let the people know and seeing what their vision is, and then seeing, okay, how it's not a compromise, it's a unification. How do we create a unification so that it feels good for both parties?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the water and the soil would be very important for a Kansas site. I think we talked about this. There's like, we don't have April showers bring May flowers in Kansas. We have May and June thunderstorms, and then a lot of dry in between.
Yeah, you got a lot of check dams to slow down that rain. You know, sometimes you got to do hugel culture and things like that to plant into because of the clay content in certain areas and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. So. And super duper clay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's the bane of my existence is the clay. So I have to bring in lots of organic matter and things and build them up.
Yeah. Microbiology and biochar.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's funny. Dig down in the clay, there's no worms, and then have to layer out and with wood chips and things, and then after a while, then it starts looking pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Well, and it's good for ponds, right? So, you know, there's always how do we make it to our benefit? You know, if we don't have a clay problem. We have a clay abundance. Okay, let's make a bunch of ponds.
Yeah, so you don't have to put a clay liner in a pond because it's already clay. That's funny.
Tamp it down. We have nothing but sand out here, right? Good luck. Good luck getting water to stay anywhere.
So instead of Armageddon, it's Armagarden.
Armagarden, yeah. I think it speaks, you know, volumes to what it is. I think garden is a common term that people understand as somewhere where you get food. And the whole Armageddon concept, you know, that's pretty shoved down our throats right now. So I thought it was a nice twist on the word itself and where we are at this stage in humanity. And it's like Armageddon, like we can turn that message around. You know, we have a lot of a really negative, fearful messaging and whatnot. And sure, I'm not ignorant to it, but how can we see something in a better world out of it? And really, my life personally had a huge 360, and I feel blessed for it. You know, I feel better off.
Explain how.
Well, I had 15 years in the fitness industry. I was doing yoga and Zumba and kickboxing and personal training, and I was performing and doing lots of arts and music, and it was super fun and I really enjoyed it, you know, but there was a limit. You know, I've already been doing it for 12 to 15 years. I was ready for a change. Right? I feel like I was probably in a comfortable place where I probably wouldn't make the change unless I was forced out of it. And really, I was handed my pink card here from the city of Calgary, March 12th, and shutdown wasn't even until March 15th. And they're already handing me my pink slip. Go get your EI. You're laid off. It's like, what's going on? You know, it's funny how they knew, but anyways, it put me in a place where I started to say, okay, I've had a good, you know, 12 year chunk here. It's time for a change. That's just me as a person. I don't like to, you know, stay in one box for a super long time. It's pretty long for me. And I knew that I wanted to do something else. You know, I was still pretty young and I just thought, well, this can't be my career for life. What am I going to do next? And I thought, well, you know, if this is the way the world is heading, where are the farmers at? I want to get my hands back in the dirt because I know that's what makes me happy. I've been gardening since I was a child. I had my own landscaping businesses when I was pregnant with my first, who's now 21 years old. So, you know, I was doing that kind of work because I knew it satisfied my soul. I wanted to be outside. I wanted to be around plants. right? I wanted to just be able to like be my own boss and, you know, make things look great. Cause at that time I was doing more landscaping for like rich people and their beautiful flower gardens and whatnot. So I have a background in the arts as well. I was a sculpture major and did a lot of photography and whatnot. So like the artistic aesthetic is really what I was after. And, you know, deadheading flowers as a pregnant lady was awesome. Like, this is great work. So when all that BS happened, I was like, well, this is an opportunity for me to delve deeper into that. And I had already learned about permaculture, you know, over 17 years ago, because I was working at Calgary's only eco store, which sold, you know, housing products and no VOC paints and alternative like countertops and whatnot. And we were doing projects with hempcrete and things like that. But I'd never taken a design certification about it. So I thought, you know, I think I'm going to go take that, you know, and just see what else. Because it started to look like the content was a little bit deeper than my understanding. And it absolutely was. And it really was a paradigm shift to take that PDC because, you know, the first thing you learn is about witnessing those patterns in nature. And that was a good hook for me because I was like, yeah, I get this. I already feel this deep relationship with the natural world. And I just thought, yeah, this is definitely something that I'd like to do more of and learn more about, especially like the water. I've been doing art about water for 25 years. I've been doing videos and sculptures and projections and glass blowing and everything with this liquid focus. It's definitely one of my most interested topics, we'll say. My deepest topics that I'm fascinated. I feel like we haven't even touched the surface of what water is. And as a tangent, Gerard Pollack is going to be at a MycoFest that I'm going to be presenting at the end of September. He wrote The Fourth Phase of Water. If you haven't looked that up, I highly recommend checking that out. He's going to be one of the speakers at MycoFest this year. So I'm going to be speaking at that festival. I can't believe it. So anyways, I totally went on a tangent there. That is in Molino, Oregon. It's put on by Peter McCory. He is the author of Radical Mycology.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I'll be doing a talk on Intro to Permaculture there September 26th to 29th in Molino, Oregon.
Yeah, I'll be getting my, I'll be doing my PDC over the wintertime. It's too easy to do type 1 errors in Kansas.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's like, okay, that's a little too far away from the water and things. So, yeah.
Where are you going to take your PDC?
I'm thinking about Midwest permaculture.
Okay.
So, cool. But I haven't decided yet. Yeah, but awesome. Yeah, I've been taking the permaculture business design course with Jason Thomas, Regeneration Nation, Costa Rica.
Cool.
So, you know, and want to get to the point where I have a more perfect day than just getting yelled at work.
I hear you. That is definitely something to strive towards. You know, like I've gotten pretty far away from a regular lifestyle, we'll say. Actually being encouraged to write a book on how I do my life because I really push outside the box in terms of, you know, and this is another thing I can thank that old story for is that I redefine things and everybody is starting to question things and redefine things. And for myself, you know, I have very strict parameters on how much screen time I'm going to have and where that's going to be. Right. So yesterday I took my iPad out when I hotspot on my phone and I went out to Gap Lake in the mountains and I brought my paddleboard and I did, you know, 4 hours of computing, but sitting in a park bench in the mountains and then jumping on my paddleboard for a break. Right. So when I started to notice that the more I took care of my own personal needs, my health as well, you know, with doing things that are active and being outside and doing things that fuel my soul, the better I operated. Right. I've started to get better ideas. I was more efficient when I was working at my desk because I knew it was like just over there, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go gather water in the mountains and I'm going to work on a patio somewhere. Right. So like blowing those ideas of how to be employed in the world is something that I've practiced my whole life. I've been an entrepreneur. I've done 11 startups. So I'm not really used to depending on other people, you know, in terms of like bringing in my income or knowing where the next check is from. Yeah, I think it's just part of the way it is. You know, I went to high school where it was credits. You had to sign in, teach yourself the school, sign out, right? And I would do, you know, every 3 weeks I'd stay home, do a whole bunch of work. And then the majority of the time I spent in coffee shops and playing hacky sack and stuff. But I was able to get it done, right? It taught me time management. It taught me how to be an entrepreneur from a very young age. So I think it served me well.
Oh, that's great. Good. So how can folks contact you?
Yeah, at permaculturecanada.world is our main website. And Armagarden is currently running through there until I, you know, have the time to split them up and whatnot. But we're relatively fresh as a company before I was Food Forest Canada. So I've rebranded and incorporated as well. You can find me there. You can find me. I have a Rumble channel called Regen Life. So I'm putting a lot of my videos of all my tours that I'm doing are going to be up there. It's also on YouTube at Permaculture Canada. The handle at Permaculture Canada you can find on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. And same with Armagarden, but it's armagarden.world. You can find that also on Instagram and on whatever, LinkedIn. All over social media. Yeah. It's kind of like
that. Sounds good.
That's a big job in itself, right? It's keeping up with that stuff.
Yeah, it really is, especially Instagram. So very good. Thank you, Lindsay. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care.
You too.
Check out the Permies Digital Marketplace. It's your source for all things permaculture for your homestead, side hustle, and designing your intentional life, from video courses to blueprints to books. There's a link in the show notes, Permies Digital Marketplace. Check it out.
Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com. If you like this content, then shoot us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thrive in the Future, or go check out the stuff on our stuff page on thriveinthefuture.com/stuff. You'll help support the podcast and maybe a little less hysteria in your life. Take care, everybody.